overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
I think it was Einstein that said imagination is greater than the intellect because the imagination can live in that realm of possibility and potential. Imagine a world where everybody loved one another, where we got along, where religions were not used as instruments of hate and separation, but were literally doorways of compassion and inclusion. Imagine, I mean, John Lennon wrote a song about imagining that greater perception. So this month I'm going to be launching into an homage to Thich Nhat Hanh, who in a way was one of my spiritual fathers. And he wrote a little book called The Zen of Living. And in that, I was going to highlight four different aspects of essential Buddhism. And knowing that coming here on a Sunday is not going to give you the depths of the teaching, but if you can even feel into the deeper truth that's being transmitted, there's the potential for that awakened self, which exists within all of us, to arise. And so the first Sunday, I talked about the idea of emptiness. And emptiness is a form is emptiness, emptiness is form. You've heard that phrase, that everything is empty of its separate nature. So he would say, you look at a flower, a beautiful flower, and if you look at the flower, you won't see the nature of the flower. You will see that there's earth, and there's water, and there's sunshine, and there's all these elements that make up flower, but flower itself is independent of its own flower nature. So when the flower dies and decomposes and returns on the compost heap of life, it's no longer flower. So when everything is seen as empty of separation, then you realize that everything is truly one, that there's only one presence, one energy, and we're empty of our separate nature. And he says the potential in realizing that everything is empty of separate self is then you realize that we're all connected, and hopefully compassion arises. Every child is your child. Every kitty cat is your kitty cat. Every kitty cat. You know, while we were gone, and the second week, Kim last Sunday spoke about impermanence. And impermanence, basically the nature of life is that this is impermanent, but spirit is eternal. And when you make peace with the impermanence of form, then you can really have the sacredness of that form. Things come into your life to go out of your life. Both pleasant things and unpleasant things come in and go out. The sad thing is we want the pleasant things to stay and we want the unpleasant things to go. But the irony is sometimes it's the unpleasant things where we grow. Now, when Trey and I launched this little trip, we had to plan it for months and months in advance. And right the day before we're going to leave on the trip, our little cat Smudge decides that she's going to die. And she stops eating. And she was 8 pounds on a good day, and now she was down to like 3 pounds, skin and bones. And Sharon was coming to water the plants, and Gigi was going to stop in and check on Smudge. And miracle of miracles, she came back, and she's as bitchy as she ever was. She's gained her weight back. She's standing and demanding, and we have her full-fledged. I had actually dug the grave. I got the shoebox with the little thing inside to bury her. I got the little statue to put on the grave. Everything was ready, and she said, not going yet. But the beautiful thing is that I got to see my attachment to her. And I guess I did the same prayer that Tia did. I sat with her, and I said, honey, if you need to go, I'm going to allow a natural death. And if you want to come back, we love you very much, and the dogs would love you. And, you know, even in her fragile state, she would lie next to the dogs because they were her. There's a relationship. They're not separate. It's funny with these animals. They don't see themselves as cat and dog. They see they're part of a little pack, a little tribe. I was thinking of the animals as my great teachers, And I said to Trey at breakfast this morning, you know, there's gospel in Humphrey. Humphrey is my little black pug. And Humphrey is the epitome of attachment. He wants things the way he wants them. When he comes to class on Wednesdays, he runs to every single person in that class and says, pet me. Pet me, you, pet me. No, you jump on her lap. He comes to Tia because he knows Tia doesn't like it, and he demands that Tia give him his attention. I get in the front seat of the car. He wants my lap. He wants to sleep in my arms, and that's just his nature. He has that attached personality. But I noticed this morning, Bert, by his very Buddha nature, he is this quiet, gentle old dog. And Bert would lie on the floor this morning with his head between his paws, and the little neurotic pug lay next to Bert, right by his side, and put his head in his little paws. And I realized sometimes we teach by example. Bert doesn't sit there and tend to Humphrey's needs. He offers him an alternative. So what if we can learn from everything in our world? Now, baby Speck, she is this very, very nurturing animal. She is the glue that holds the family together. And Humphrey thinks she's his mother. And so Humphrey goes up to baby Speck and he chews on her neck like he's suckling the mother's tit. And he chews and she chews and she just sits there and says, okay, if you need to suckle on my neck and suckle on my neck. He did that once to Bert. Bert went, and that stopped. So you can learn from your animals how to live skillfully in this world. So impermanence is a huge thing to learn. And now this Sunday, I'm speaking about non-craving or non-attachment. And you know, the very nature of the personality is to want things and push things away. That's the way our mind works. We want things that are pleasant. We don't want things that are unpleasant. So in Buddhism, they teach this thing called the middle way. It's a concept. It's like walking the edge of a razor blade. The middle way basically says you're not going to grasp at anything, because if you grasp at it, then you're going to potentially suffer. I can't be happy until I get what I want. I want to be in control. I want him or I want her. I want that career. I want that money. I want that stuff. And the other is pushing it away. I don't want a heart attack. I don't want enemies. I don't want struggle. I don't want strife. I don't want fear. And the middle path is you walk down this and you let it all be okay. We just taught a wonderful class called The Deepest Acceptance. I can accept the most painful moments. You know, to accept Smudge's death was really to accept her life. And when you accept the death, then you also accept that what's real can never die. When people share they've lost a loved one, I'm always brought to the truth that love was never born and love never dies. And in the Sufi tradition, they say, you come here on this incarnation with light and with love. And when you leave, you take the light with you, but you leave the love behind. Now, does that light go anywhere? Yes, it returns to the light, the one light, something greater than any of us can conceptualize. Don't you want a spirituality that's bigger than you, instead of a narrow way of thinking that there's a pit in hell where people are going to burn, and then you accuse other people there's a place in hell for you? Get rid of that archaic way of thinking and start having a greater perception of reality. Wow, we don't need the mask anymore. The mask that I can't live without, or the mask that I can't live within. And the mask is just the persona. So here we're getting to a deeper existential truth. There is no you separate from that. All there is that. Wow. And my teacher said, when you stop making spirituality about you and you start making it about that, you can't outgive the universe. So my teacher, Kennedy Schultz, who was kind of like a spiritual father to me, he says, you can put yourself in debt to the world, but the world doesn't have your good. He says, ultimately, you want to put yourself in debt to the universe. So that's why we're going to do a class on conversations with the universe. The universe is always speaking. Are we listening? Crazy people like Carl Jung was listening to the universe, and he had the chutzpah to speak the truth, even if it was controversial. His last little book, this minister said, this is all you ever really need. I love it when they make it really simple. All you ever really need is this book. And it was called The Truth About Job, I think. And basically, Carl Jung said that God and the devil have to be one. In oneness, there can't be two. Now, that shocks people. That means that we get to embrace our own inner shadow as well as our own inner light. And then you have that beautiful symbol of the Tao and the darkness. The light is the brightest. And in the light, there is still that darkness. And then we get to play with the symbol of the Tao, and you realize they've all been pointing to the same thing. Ernest Holmes says, the thing you're looking for, you're looking with. While I was on this trip, I couldn't get television, but I strangely got YouTube, Facebook. And, you know, I try to find those more inspiring moments on Facebook. And Carol Zukoski sent this little thing out with a picture of Judy Garland and Ray Bolger, and it said, friendships last forever. And so I thought, well, I can endure that. So I pushed the button, and it was on the Judy Garland show in the early 60s, having a conversation with Ray Bolger about their role together in The Wizard of Oz. And he said to Judy Garland, he said, you know, that incredible movie was about the sacredness of home. And the irony is that everyone in that movie was seeking for something that they already had. The Cowardly Lion had the courage that he was seeking. The Tin Man had all the heart that he was seeking. The Scarecrow was the brightest one in the whole group, and he was seeking a brain. So what if you could know the very thing you're looking for, you already have? And that was Dorothy's big epiphany. She had to seek some good outside herself, somewhere over the rainbow, when it was right now, but she had to awaken from the illusion of that dream, that the good you're seeking already is, that the love you're seeking is here. It's not out there in form. And once that awakening happens, you know, and we're given the message from the time we're a little child that it already is there. So this idea of craving is an interesting one, isn't it? It's the path of addiction. And we're all addicted. We're addicted to our story. We're addicted to our stuff. We're addicted to feeling good. We're addicted to being in control. That's probably the biggest addiction of them all. When we were doing our class, The Dark Side of the Light Chasers, one of the things that I resist more than anything is somebody trying to control me. And then I have to realize that the very thing that you resist is the thing that's operating in you. So then I had to affirm, I'm a control freak. Wow. I don't want you to control me, and I don't really want to control you. So control is that part of us that thinks we think we're in control. There is no control. And when the illusion of control is seen through, then the possibility to not crave that is let go of. You know, to allow this center to flower without me trying to control what it's supposed to look like. To let my relationship with Trey just flower 40 plus years, not trying to control him. Have you ever tried to change another person? It's an impossible task. This is a little book that was given to me 20 years ago. It's called The Gardener, Inspirational Reflections of this Spanish Poet. And in there, he tells the story of a young man who goes to the gardener, much like a father, and he wants help. How can I be in a world that there is so much suffering that makes my heart sick when I hear about it? And a young man with his splendid ideas, who often asked the gardener for advice, went to his hut one cold and rainy night. And he said, I've been observing the world around me, and I found that things tear my soul and make me sad. I've seen that in the world. There is injustice, there is lack of kindness, and I've seen hopelessness in the eyes of the poor and the ill and the children on our borders. Oh, I added that one. I've seen the claws of greed clutched in the hearts of men, and in the midst of the hate clouding the world. And I think I need to change the world in any way I can. So he's asking the gardener, what essentially can I do? What can one man do against so much grief and so much devastation and so much closed-heartedness? The young man fell silent, hiding his face in his hands. The gardener then commented to him. He says, you can change the world, in a very soft tone. He says, by changing yourself, was the gardener's reply. I don't understand, he said. If only one man changes, how can mankind change? And the gardener says to him, each human being is the entire human race. And his image shooting towards the ardent depths of the cosmos, said the gardener, looking into the fire, when a human being submerges himself into his true nature as the ocean of light and love, then all human beings are caught by the brilliance of this innate goodness. Wow, is it that simple? To just yield to your very true nature, which is light and love? And by being that, just like Bert was with Humphrey on the floor, it will change a neurotic, grasping pug into a deferent, quiet, peaceful little being? I wonder, is it that simple? You don't have to understand, he said to the young man. Birds do not understand the mechanism of flight, however they fly. It is natural for them to fly, as it is natural for a human being to attain their true nature, which is love itself. You know, for those of you who came to the garden party, it seems like every year a robin wants to nest in this bush right at the heart of the party. And while we were gone, the robin gave birth to three very large little robins. Robins? Robinettes? And the whole time Sharon was taking care of the garden, they were there. And when Trey and I got home, they decided that they were going to leave their nest. I could tell because all the bird poop was underneath the nest on the patio, and I climbed up on a chair and I peeked into the nest and they had flown the coop. Now, isn't that the best way to raise your children? To fly the coop? I'm just saying, anyway. What must I do to change myself? Said the young man. And he says, don't try to change yourself. He says, if you don't try, you won't achieve it, continued the gardener. You have to wish for the change within yourself and be open so that the transformation takes place inside you. But if you try to provoke it, a conflict will begin in your heart that will leave you wounded and hurt. Simply open your heart and let the transformation take place. And when life considers it the right moment, it will happen. Did you notice how Dorothy had to go to the Wicked Witch of the West and get the broomstick and do everything? And when it was conditions were right and she went within, she had what she was looking for all along. That's what he's saying. All your efforts won't get you to the first way station, so stop trying to change. Just show up in class and trust me, you will change. I'll sit you next to Bert. Anyway, the bird isn't shown how to fly. Nobody explains the fish how it must swim. Clearly, one day they throw themselves into the wind or into the sea and their true nature does the rest. Now, could we know our true nature is love? And love's going to do the work. Not to get some cockamamie greater idea, because you don't need another idea. In fact, you probably need to get rid of all ideas. And then that pure awareness, that heart-centered awareness, will just flower. And it'll tell you to do the outrageous. Wow. To love is written in humanity's nature. A love as big as the ocean. There's that word again. A love which covers everything. Humanity has only to throw themselves into the tide of life with an open heart and let their own nature, their true nature, do the rest. Wow. To get our bloated nothingness out of the way and connect with the divine circuits. It is love that will bring about the transformation in your soul, and with it will come the transformation of the world. I think all the great teachers have taught this same lesson, to just love one another as I've loved you, to really love, to love unconditionally everything that's in your way, that it's all here for you. Absorbed in his thoughts, the gardener finished by saying in a very quiet voice to the young man, he says, when a human being finds love within themselves and reveals it, the whole universe shudders in its splendor. Wow. You don't have to grasp for it. It's already there. So let's just stop and feel that beautiful message of the gardener, that the very thing that we're looking for is right here, right now. And we let go of our grasping, and we open to it. We say, this life belongs to you. Do with it as you will. And in that, life can have its way with us. And love can remove the masks that we can't live without and the masks that we can't live within. And we no longer need to put a mask on anyway, because we are free as the love and the light awakening to itself in this holy moment. then all is well. And so it is.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. More information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.